Hello and welcome to another thrilling edition of the World Cinema Film Club. I'm your host as always, Edward Jones, and joining me, of course, is my co-host as always, the Professor, Mr. Stephen Palmer. We are currently in the midst of another heat wave here on in Britain, which we're currently battling through with just big-ass fans because we don't have air conditioning here, so if it sounds a little buzzy in the background, I do apologise, but it's better than
Melt.
The sound of presenters' heads hitting hard tables. I know.
It is. That's just a reminder for everybody who are listening in the far future.
Season.
It is,
obviously, as we record, 31 days of Asian Horror.
The second week of September. There's no reason for it to be like this in the UK.
And hopefully you're enjoying it. But tonight we're talking about one of Stephen's great passions in life. Game of millionaires kicking a ball around a field for 90 minutes. As we look at the documentary about Diego Maradona. Stephen, I'm going to let you introduce this one because this is obviously your pick. You decided that you were going to introduce Britain onto our world map, and you chose this documentary, which is in, I wouldn't say Argentinian. Yeah.
Yep.
Because this is... I'm right in saying this is a director that you're actually a fan of his work. It's not just
Spanish
film,
and Italian,
so.
Really. Directed by a Englishman of, I think, Indian descent. So yeah, all right. I'll take the lead of the introduction. Yeah. Absolutely. So Asif Capiada, he has made proper films, and indeed one called Far North is kind of a sort of inspired by Onibaba, and it stars Michelle Yeoh, and may well somehow fit into our Asian films that aren't Asian sub show that we're going to do one day. but he kind of made it really big with a documentary called Senna. About 2010 documentary called Senna about the life of Brazilian Formula One driver Ayrton Senna, but played it in a way so his documentaries basically use archive footage, and he puts them together to tell a story. And the genius of Senna is that whilst it told the story of Ayrton Senna, who's this sort of myth, if you're a fan of Formula One, he's like this mythical, one of the greatest drivers that ever existed, but also has a very tragic death. And the Senna documentary plays out in sort of two time frames. One is here's the history of Ayrton Senna. Meanwhile, we sort of go through the final weekend of his life, and it plays up like a drama. And if you do not know the story of Ayrton Senna, it's quite shocking. But if you know the story, I know exactly what happened to Ayrton Senna. I watched it at the time on TV. But it just makes this wonderful dramatic... It's like a documentary, but with sort of this dramatic edge. But there's no talking heads. There's no like Nick Broomfield putting himself as part of the show. It's all documentary footage that's put together. There's on-screen titling and stuff to help you, but it's and it was so revolutionary and so well, maybe revolutionary is pushing it a bit, but it was so well made that it's all become part of the sort of the Formula One vernacular. And when matey boy from Happy Days made that film Rush, he literally nicks a scene from it, even though it's a completely different era that he's going from. But that was good. He then followed up with a documentary about Amy Winehouse, the sort of the British jazz and blues singer, again with a tragic end, again put together from hundreds of hours of archived footage, a lot of it being sort of this family one, home videos.
Oh, this one really
again,
irritated me.
Again, trying to tell this
rotten.
Story.
I mean, this one also had a lot of talking heads.
Tragic
involved,
end.
Because Evelyn and Amy Wynn.
This one was a
bit
more
life,
Nick Brumfield like. Because I think he was trying to put the blame on a couple of people, which is what Nick Brumfield tends to do.
And at the same time, they all want to paint her as this, oh, she was like this tragic, tortured artist. And when at the end of the day, she was just a junkie who was able to fund her habit. And I mean, I went to some of these final shows, and if you just saw her burbling away while fans tried to cheer on, shouting, "We love you, Amy," and that, and she had no clue where she was. But at the same time, they're trying to basically rewrite history, when the two people to blame were her ex-husband and her father, who basically just kept pushing the cash cow as long as they could. And nobody once thought, you know, maybe we need to cool the jets here and, you know, get her some help. And I think this is the thing which the documentary, like, really sort of brushes over the fact that, and, like, goes with, like, the talking head side and sort of like, oh, you know, when she was just this tortured soul and stuff. And she was mediocre at best.
Well, I disagree on many levels, but I absolutely thought the documentary absolutely went down the route of trying to blame the father and the ex and the boyfriend stroke husband. I thought it was quite hugely critical of them. But I enjoyed it. I saw that. I went to see that one at the cinema, and I was the only person there. I went to the local showcase at midnight to watch it, and they left the whole showcase open just so I could watch it. I enjoyed it. But I think I like the style. I don't think it was particularly talking heads. It wasn't talking heads in the sense he wasn't interviewing people. It was taking other people's interviews and patching it together. Anyway, those two are incredibly successful. But I do think this film, the Diego Maradona film, kind of snuck under the radar a bit. And it's very much part of a trilogy of his work. I don't think he's done any more documentaries, or if he has, I'm unaware of it. Again, using a character.
Oh, I mean, I understand who Diego Maradona is. Diego Maradona is like
adoration from his
fans. Who sort of transcends the sport. There's people within
sort of
all sports who transcend their sport, like Michael Jordan, David Beckham.
I mean, I don't know how well
these people
who Maradona is.
People don't even follow the sport know who they are, because their achievements are so significant and what they bring to the sport is so significant. And Maradona was certainly one of those people.
That's right. And actually more so as British people, because we did make him into this villain. He is this personification of... Because of the time he was active, related to the time when... Of the Falklands conflict. I can't really call it a war. We as Brits were programmed to hate the Argies, and there was this little arrogant, supremely talented footballer. And the film talks about it, doesn't it? In a short scene or two. But you know, Maradona is also this dirty cheat, and he's an Argie, and blah blah blah. Because basically, we made up with the French and the Germans, and we needed another villain. And it just feels a bit like that. But yes, he does. He absolutely transcends sport.
Yeah,
and, you know,
I mean, it's interesting, really, because I mean, something this documentary,
you know,
kind of goes out
Messi or
to correct, really, because obviously Pele being the first, because he was about bringing football to America, and then with this documentary, it's sort of like,
the very first one was
sort of
Pele,
like seeing
another name
you
that
as
mentioned.
Being Pele Jr., and he's like, no, I don't see myself as being Pele. I just see myself as being Maradona. But if we were to like chart the timeline of like memorable footballers, the current sort of climate within the Joe blogs on the street, the people like myself would be mistakenly go, oh, it's Pele and then Beckham and then Ronaldo. We kind of skip over Maradona's contribution to this. And It's about when Beckham was like took football over to America again. He was sort of like
getting
soccer established in the US.
Yeah, I mean to be fair, again, that's a very Anglo-centric view. Although Beckham was a super world star, but yeah, I think the Well, the thing about Beckham is that he had the looks. He married a pop star. He was very media savvy. Still is very media savvy, indeed. And him and Messi have joined up together in Inter Miami now, and which is again between them is trying to rev up the football in America. I think Pelé had a little bit more to football fans than just taking it to America. Obviously, he as a 17-year-old he lit up a World Cup, and he was but Pelé to me was always part of these great Brazilian teams. He was the icing on the cake. The wonderful thing about Maradona as a football fan is that he took average sides and made them infinitely better, but he's this incredibly flawed character. I can't remember when this film was made. I'm just going to 2019. So it got released a year before he died, which is either good or bad timing. I'm not too sure which. But Maradona is this sort of this hero and this villain, and he's a dirty little cheat, and he's that famous World Cup game against England, and like 1 minute he's cheating, 3 minutes later he's scoring one of the greatest goals of all time. This is the character. So what this film does is, this film isn't really about the history and the life of Maradona. There's a little bit at the beginning which sets it up, and there's a little bit at the end which sort of shows what happened to him, but it's really about his time during the 1980s and when he was playing for an Italian football team, Napoli. And Napoli is a city in the south of Italy. Most other football teams in Italy are from the north, the top side of the boot, in cities like Turin and Milan. So Napoli's always had this kind of poor southerner relation. It's obviously in or around the mob as well, and so this guy and when Maradona went to Napoli, his reputation was shit. it's hinted at the beginning of the film, but they don't really talk about it. But he basically got into a fist and kicking fight in the Copa del Rey in front of the Spanish king. Again, the match against Athletic Bilbao, you see it when he's at Barcelona in this fight. And basically, he just embarrassed the club, the city, himself, and got chucked off. No one else wanted him. So that's what this film's about. And this film's about this little footballer and how he brought both success.
Yeah,
success, which has only just been repeated
as someone who doesn't care for football in the slightest.
It was the root of his downfall as a footballer and as an individual.
I mean, for myself, football is just a game of 90 minutes where not a lot really happens. I mean, if you listen to football commentary, it sounds a lot like this.
Halfback passes to the center, back to the wing, back to the center. Center holds it. Holds it. Holds it.
And then if you listen to something like a sport I like, such as like wrestling, which sort of commentary sounds a lot like this.
Oh my God.
And then if you listen to Test Match Cricket, which his commentary sounds a lot like this.
So they'll definitely have a knock. Now what's going on? Is that drinks already?
Dear.
What's happened? Aren't they having drinks now? Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, let our Radio 4 long wave listeners hope you're braced there in the studio. It's coming slightly as expected, halfway through and over. But it's time for your shipping forecast. What's happened there? That's halfway through an over, and everyone's running on.
Are they changing the ball or something? What's the fourth umpire doing coming in?
He's bringing a drink out. What's going on?
I don't know.
The more stoppages than baseball.
I don't understand this. That was two balls into the over. Wasn't it? They all came running on. Great, even the ground staff are out there.
Even the commentators know nothing is happening. People remark, wow, that game is still going on.
I love Test Match Special. I think I I think cricket's something. I love cricket, but I wouldn't go and watch it in that way. Cricket is the sort of thing that I have on the television or on the radio as an accompaniment to me doing something else.
And then
the moments of excitement, I'll get drawn to it. But I
get beaten by countries that more or less often don't have clean running water.
They only play
on the poorest end of the scale.
In countries where everyone has their feet in it. And
like on a daily basis, like cricket were beaten by India. We lost part of the empire over a wager of cricket, so much so that the Indian film industry decided to remind us of this by producing Once Upon a Time in India. Just to remind us of this, that we lost part of an
obviously
empire over a game of cricket.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to forgive you for not knowing the current state of cricket, where England are fucking amazing at cricket right now. But I take your general point. Yes. However, if you ever went to India, if you think David Beckham was ever popular, you have no idea how popular.
No,
Sachin
but it
Tendulkar,
was.
The ex,
it was interesting, obviously, with this film. It opens up. This is our second film.
David
I have to know so far
Pele,
in our,
plus Maradona,
in our season.
Plus Messi,
but we've opened
plus
with monetary
Ronaldo
price cars being held down city
different,
streets.
Different world, different place.
As you see the little
Fiat
careering down,
or the association football.
The press
however,
chasing it, or if this is Maradona's rider choice for he's going to this opening conference.
Yeah. Well, he talks about this. So, I think I hinted. So, Napoli is this really poor city. And remember, Italy in the 80s was also really poor. But at the time, in the 80s and 90s, it was viewed to be the best league. Serie A was meant to be the best league. And it's only hinted at, you only see it if you know what you're looking for in this film, that's where all the big players went. But they all went to Juventus, or they went to AC Milan or Inter Milan. I think there's a little bit of a voiceover that talks about this. And there's one clip where you see Michel Platini playing against Maradona, but nothing's made of it. And Platini's another guy that sort of transcends the sport, although now as a corrupt official, but he was a fantastic player as well. But and he talks about it. Says, I signed for Napoli. He had to sign for Napoli because of the mess he'd made of his time at Barcelona. But instead of giving him a Ferrari, they gave him a Fiat. He literally says that. And
rugby is a hooligan's game played by gentlemen.
And this guy.
Gentleman's game played by hooligans.
He's absolutely broke. So football isn't quite the. You talked about millionaires. You know, it's a game of. What's the old saying? Rugby is a game played, and football is a game for gentlemen. Played by hooligans. Obviously, since I would say sort of mid-90s, football has become a game played by millionaires, and kids younger than 17 are now multi-millionaires and stuff like that. The 80s and 90s, this wasn't the case, but Serie A was, you know, Italian football was the pinnacle. But he gets there and he gets, like you say, he gets driven in this pikey little Fiat. Although, I guess if you went to Juventus, who I think were owned by the people who own Fiat, would take all this very personally. But yeah, it goes to this stadium. The stadium, by the way, hasn't changed a jot, apart from they've renamed it to Stadium Diego Maradona.
Oh yeah, can we just talk about Italian soccer fans?
But, which is ironic when
this
you think
gives
how the
me real flashbacks.
But
like,
it's like this concrete thing, and you see him walk down these alleys, which are still there, and the fans spit on players who walk.
This is the Italian league.
It's a really
coverage. Instead, and they made this whole thing about football Italia. And
yeah,
Italian
so
fans who are there with flares, racist banners, and basically throw crap on the pitch at any given opportunity.
Yeah. So this would have been, so that would have been Golazzo with James Richardson. So that was more the mid 90s. So that's like when Gazza went over to Lazio to play. They had this thing, and Channel 4, you're right, had this Serie A football, and it was cool and trendy, and it was just all part of the 90s. This is like 5 or 6 years before, but there were teams were full of foreigners. But yeah. And I guess it's kind of interesting because Maradona, again, they only hint at this, but of course he is half Native American in terms of in indigenous, I want to call them Indians, but whatever the native peoples of
Oh yeah, they
Argentina
don't ever
South America,
like, let it go, so the fact that
he's looked
this
down,
poor
he was looked down
the,
in his own
slums.
Country because he was, and you'll notice a lot of Argentinian footballers are white. It's a rich man's game in Argentina, so he's this kid from the streets. He's
oh yeah.
Yeah, and he's really poor, and he's half caste, and then he's gone to this city where, you know, they go up to Juventus, and the Juventus fans, which is in Turin, and they're saying, "You've all got cholera." And yeah, and that's one of the nicest things that they say, you know. And it is Italian, and the Italian fans, so this is called the Tifosi, the really hardcore ultra fans, it's still not nice now, and Italian football still has a problem with racism and homophobia. But yeah, it was, you know, I remember growing up, and the British hooligan problem, 70s, early 80s was a thing. It all changed in 1990, football suddenly became cool. Ironically, a World Cup, which
yeah,
is referenced
we used to have like a
within the context
hooligan
of this film.
And then
the
hooligans all went,
the downfall,
I think it was,
of Maradona,
it was
also
or
the
it was
cleaning
Italy.
Up of football.
And then
and
they
in
all
a
got
way,
clubbed by the Italian police.
Italians
didn't
purged
look half
Maradona
tough.
From their system.
Because, you know, the European police just don't stand for the sort of tosh that British police do. British police are very refrained, and they sort of like move them along, but the Italian and the French police just like went and battered the hell out of them, and they were like, police brutality. It's like, you went over there to start a fight and you got a bigger dog went and started on you. That's all that happened.
Yeah, I know. Obviously, we also had the Heysel disaster, which was, you know, terrible thing that happened at the Heysel Stadium. Was it Juventus versus Liverpool? Yeah, Michel Platini was playing. What scored the winning goal? But that got British fans banned from Europe. So not only did they lose the fight, but they got banned. But football cleaned up. It's like after Italia 90 was this astonishing, I remember it well, it was an astonishing tournament where football, like, I don't know, the TV presentation suddenly got it right. I guess in the UK, or certainly in England, the English team did well and got to the semi-finals, and we had Gazza and Lineker, and we had Nessun Dorma singing, and I there was something about it. We also had the fallout and the changes in football stadiums from after the Hillsborough disaster, which would have been just before
it's
that.
It's a beautiful game, isn't
so
it?
So stadiums suddenly weren't these places where you stood on concrete steps with wooden bars and moss, and people they're pissing themselves because they'd eaten so much, drunk so much beer, and it really was, and it's really changed. If you go to a modern top level stadium now, it's it's just completely different. I mean, I used to go and watch England play in those days at Wembley, and I used to be terrified for my life as a 10-year-old. but now it's everyone has to sit down. You're not even allowed to stand up and sing, and football's just changed. Money's got to football. It's a lot changed, and people like Maradona wouldn't succeed because they wouldn't win the media battle. Whereas if you look at his modern representative is Messi. Another Argentinian, another little short, stocky, incredibly talented Argentinian, but Messi does nothing wrong, apart from sometimes doesn't pay his tax bills. But, that's what Maradona did. That's what he got caught for. How funny. But, yes, everyone loves Messi. People love to hate Maradona in the end. But, yeah, it does. This film doesn't really pull its punches in the knocking down of... I don't know, the idolisation of Maradona. I mean,
yeah,
the guy can't keep his cock in his pants.
You mentioned already.
In fact, he doesn't go as far. So I think this film talks about
the
one kid
that
he
had
with a friend of his sister's. That's been denied.
Which is really interesting as well, because as you said, it's not painting him in the best light. It's a real warts and all story. In the fact that, he admits that he had problems when he starts he has to completely change his style of play because in the Italian leagues they're playing completely different. And you mentioned already the fact that, as he puts it, I was no saint, because he says he's very loyal to his partner, but at the same time he says, I'm no saint. And he does, as I said, he knocks up his sister's best friend's. And who has a child that he completely denies, and there's hints that he's involved with other women, and especially during his mass cocaine binges that he gets into in the later part of his career. Oh wow. Was it Paulina, I believe?
Yeah, so okay. When Maradona died in 2020,
Claudia, sorry.
There are 11 known children. Three he had with the woman who became his wife in this documentary. The one he talks about that he met when she was 15 and he was 16. And so she had... I can't remember her name, but yes. So he... Claudia, isn't it? I think it is Claudia, yeah. So, yeah, so he had three with her. He divorced. He had another couple with another woman in later life. But... interestingly, the guy, the kid in this film, let's just call him Diego Maradona Jr. He's got Claudia pregnant at this stage as well, but he just denies it. At the end of the film, you see that moment where he accepts him as his son, 30 years later. Interestingly, young Diego Maradona did try to make it as a footballer as well. This is just a bit of gossip, but not gossip, a little bit of trivia. But he ended up... So in Napoli, there's this other team made up of refugees, because Italy obviously has this sort of right wing thing going on at the moment where they're blaming everything on the refugees. Does it sound familiar to any other European country? Oh my God, it's all the refugees that are ruining our country. So there's a football team made up of these people. So people from Africa and stuff like that. But Diego Maradona Jr. actually played for that team and there's been some articles about it recently. He doesn't anymore because he's too old for it. But he was and they've gone up.
He's not obviously a renowned bad behaviour.
Yeah,
at the same time,
he was
a
decent,
very charismatic
Maradona himself,
for the film,
even
focus on.
At the height
and
of his popularity,
even more so when this is shot in a very sort of early Nick Broomfield style, was in the fact there is no narration. There is little sound bits of historians and football historians and. Maradona interview footage as well, but a lot of it is just the footage speaking for it. And as I said, he's such a charismatic individual that it's hard not to kind of like him, because this is a 2.5-hour documentary you're going to be with him before. So if he'd been an absolute despicable person, this would have been much more of a slog to get through. But he's got this weird charm to him, to say the least.
Oh, absolutely. And he inspires those around him. I mean, and because he says things that other people are thinking and wouldn't dare say. So he's got this sort of, he's got this element of him. He's not as media savvy as some people are. Even then. Again, the other thing is, you know, you talk about how the film's put together. There is football in this film, but, and there are a couple of matches which are played out through the film, particularly the during the 1986 World Cup. But it's very non-traditional angles, isn't it? It's all very up close. It's all very, it's not, sometimes with sports documentaries, you seem to spend half the documentary watching the CBS presentation of a sporting event or something like that. Whereas this feels, it's done in, I know it's just the way it's been edited and the way that been zoomed in on certain bits of action, but it feels like you're there at the stadium at some strange corner and you can't, you know, you're not seeing the whole action very well. But there was a film they made after the 1998 World Cup final called Zidane, where the film just follows Zinedine Zidane through a match. And so it's all sort of closed up on him, so he hasn't even got the ball all the time, stuff like that. And it felt a bit like that. Here's some clips of Maradona with the ball. Here's some goals he's scoring. I have to say, standard of goalkeeping in 1980s Serie A was fucking awful because they didn't really try. But and the pitches were terrible. And like you say, but it was the terrible fans. It was the racist stuff. It was the fact, basically, he was. They couldn't say it out loud, but his move.
Well, that's
was
the thing, because Napoli are broke, mafia. And the country
the owner of Napoli gets
itself
very
is
upset
broke.
in that
and they've just spent all this money on this really expensive player, who they're banking all their hopes on.
Reporters are asking, does he know
the
who
course
these people
of, like,
are?
as the season goes on, and how he rises this godlike status to the people in Napoli, they're building shrines. He gets a blood test and the nurse takes his blood to the shrine that they've got for him, and he finds it all very weird, but the people are all like, you know, Maradona, we love you, Maradona. And the fact that he wins the first World Cup, and then obviously going into the second World Cup, which is obviously Italia 94, which you remember, but I remember just as a Mega Drive game.
Italia 90. Yeah. Well, you're 10 years younger than me, you see. So I was Italia 90. I was 18. This is prime Stephen love of football time. I mean, that's not going on. He took Napoli from a team, although in the top division, were fighting relegation every year. I think they won the league in his second season. And they would win it again later on. It's not made very clear because they're really building up to the 1986 World Cup. But yeah, he used to win again, and they never win it again until last year, right? So it's hard to explain what an effect he had. It was like Messi going to Coventry City and winning the league the next year, and then doing it again a couple of years' time, and they won the UEFA Cup, and you know, they were always first or second for this period of time, that success that they've never really had before. I think they've won a couple of, I forget what the cup's called in Italy, it doesn't really matter, but that's the limit of their success. So he's gone to this team, and he's brought it up, and he's become a hero, and there's this wonderful bit, which actually, again, was repeated this year. So they win the Serie A title, and you know, he's bought this group of players that are obviously, they're decent, but they're not Maradona level. He's won what's viewed to be at the time the hardest league of the world, and the party goes on for 3 months, and outside a cemetery someone's painted a sign saying, "You missed one hell of a party," telling all the dead people what they've missed. And I guess that's just the power of sport, and in certain countries that's the power of football. Yeah. And there is the and especially it's probably where he's come from, that would be the power of the sport in like South American countries. Would it be so big if he'd gone to Milan or to Juventus and won the league? Probably not, because they do it all the time. He's taken this thing. So he is held up in esteem. And then he goes on in the middle of this, 1986 World Cup. He takes Argentina, which
had won the World Cup
a couple of iterations before.
England and Argentina get into a shouting
match.
That's
always been marked as a bit sus. Because that was when Argentina was still at this time under the control of the military junta. And, well, it was... So when did they win it? They won it in 78 World Cup. They won it. They beat the famous Johan Cruyff Holland side in the final. But basically, they one game they needed to win by a ridiculous number of goals, and they won 6-0. And it's just a bit sus. And there was a suspicion that basically other teams were referees were bribed, other teams were put under undue pressure, and that basically the military, you know. A sporting event. Ask Mr. Hitler what it's like to host a sporting event to boost the popularity of a regime. That's what happened in the 1936 Olympic Games as well. So it's a bit like that. Maradona's actually a little bit after that, but there was a tournament 82. I can't remember if he didn't go. There was some reason, so he's held it. But 86, he took this team of good players again, and they won the World Cup. So he's done this thing with Napoli. He's done this thing with
which is the
one
Argentina, he does the
hand
of
then
God. Is that the first
86,
World Cup of the second?
88, 89. He continues to be successful in Napoli, despite the issues that we have with him as a person. So that's 86. No, that's the first World Cup. So that's what we will remember him as. And this match is part of it. So this is when they're playing England in the 1986 quarterfinals. We've had the Falklands War, which he admits he doesn't really understand what that's about. A lot of Argentinians, you know, that this fight over the Falklands or the Malvinas Islands, but there's a national humiliation because they didn't, as he admits in the film, you know, they didn't just lose the war, they were obliterated. And so they're seeing it as this big battle against the horrible English. The English are seeing, again, it's this, you know, this is the new enemy that we have, Argentina. This is what the press have done it. And yes, he scores a goal with his hand, and he's never denied it. And we see several times in the movie, he says, when I was doing this, it's because God did it, right? So it's not, so when he calls it, it wasn't my hand, it was the hand of God. This is not something he's just pulled out of his ass. This is something he's been saying all the time. And then 5 minutes later, he runs through the entire English team and scores one of the greatest goals of all time. What we don't see is Gary Lineker scoring a goal in the final few minutes to make it 2-1 and a little bit exciting. But yeah, and then they beat Belgium in the semi-finals, and then the Great West Germany again.
You see, I didn't really mind that too much because I said I'm not coming.
The film is so focused on Maradona,
like,
it sometimes doesn't give you
the
context of what these matches are.
The Maradona side, which stopped getting overly confusing.
This Germany always win everything; they're very efficient. Blah blah blah. But yeah, so that's. On Maradona, absolutely. So I don't think there was a lot of football in here. You just need to know that, he's made a shitty team win the league. That sounds fairly good. And he's made his country win the World Cup. And there's some little bits of him running around with the ball. And you think, well, they're telling me he's good, he's fine. So I think the film succeeds because it doesn't do too much of this. And I'm just getting overexcited because this is just my childhood. However... Italia 90 comes along. This is a World Cup that's in Italy. And he sort of says some things trying to make the people of Naples support his Argentina and Maradona over Italy. And for a country that had only existed for 90 years up to that point, that really pissed people off. And also because... And the narrative of the film is because Argentina beat Italy in the semi-final of their own World Cup in Naples, which was just the daftest thing. And again, that's mentioned in the film, isn't it? Like, why on earth did the Italian Football Association allow that to even be a possibility? That would just have been so easy to ignore. But at that point,
yes, needless to say that
Italy as a whole turns on him, and suddenly
because he can
his phone's being tapped,
so that you know Italy get the his, win, which is obviously Italy is so the, happy,
it, like, as if it was Al Capone, his taxes are checked
they
out.
Believe they're going to win it. The only thing really standing in their way is Maradona and what. How he chooses to take one penalty kick is what it comes down to. And because Maradona, you know, just plays the game, he scores his penalty for Argentina. And, you know, as you said, that causes Italy to then turn on Maradona and start looking at things. He gets investigated and it all goes, it's the beginning and the end really for him. And it's so rare you can like link someone's problems just to one choice.
And yeah, well, I mean, he has admitted, you know, the film, he admits he was doing cocaine at the time he was in.
Oh yeah, he's in the crime family pocket because they keep
him. So he's been doing cocaine for nearly 10 years at this point. So this is not new. He's clearly been shagging around and seeing prostitutes all this time as well. You know, there's he's been doing special events for the crime family, right? He just keeps going. that's right. And prostitutes. And so everyone knew this. They just thought, do you know what? Now we're going to turn on the fucker. and they do. And they do so quickly. And I remember, you know, it was worldwide news when he basically got kicked out of Italy. What the film doesn't say is actually quite what happened to him after that. But we'll talk about that a little bit at the end. But yeah, his downfall is sudden and absolute. No, but he is still, I believe, yeah, considered a hero in Napoli. Really, like I say, after he died, they renamed the stadium to Stadium Diego Maradona. So I think he's still remembered fondly. But
days of his,
yeah, his reputation just disappeared overnight.
The film kind of starts wrapping things up rather quickly. So by the time he hits rock bottom, it's like an afterthought. It's like a 15-minute afterthought, and it's basically interview footage of him being rather bloated and morose about what happened to his recovery. And it doesn't even really go into his recovery. The film is really only concerned with the time in Naples and how it all sort of went to pot over that second World Cup.
Yeah, which is strange. So he, you know, the truth is he went off to play back in Spain again for Seville, but sort of as a player, the cocaine we see in the film that, you know, he has to work quite hard at being fit. He has that fitness trainer, doesn't he, who keeps him on top. But it's very hard keeping a drug addict fit. He then got himself fit for the 94 World Cup, which was the one in the USA, and he basically got caught doing drugs. He failed a drugs test and was kicked out. And it's like this, that he did score a goal. It's this famous image which they do show of him scoring a goal, but yeah, he's basically, you know, that's his second failure on the big stage, but none of us are surprised. He will go on later on to manage Argentina as a manager, but we see him, we see, yeah, the overweight.
It did. I mean, they didn't even show like the soccer aid game he had against Gordon Ramsay's team.
Super fit.
Which I remember not supporting as being like one of the highlights of the year, as Ramsay smashed that fat pasta eater. because of course Britain really holds a grudge, doesn't it? So
Yeah, we really do. As a Tottenham Hotspur fan, we still go on about the time. So we had a couple of Argentinian players from this era, who famously played for Tottenham, Ozzy Ardiles and Ricky Villa. And later on, I think Maradona came and played in Ozzy Ardiles' testimonial match. So this is a friendly match to give Ozzy some money after he's retired, because they weren't millionaires then. And they still go on about it now, mate. And that was after he was failed at many things. And you'll find articles, the time Diego Maradona played for Tottenham. So this guy is still lauded and heralded as this great man, but it is his downfall was really sad and protracted. And as I say, he died in a couple of years ago, in 2020. His death, far too young, but also clearly down to his ongoing issues with drugs and his general health. I think he'd had a heart attack previously, and you know, he'd had open heart surgery. You know, his slide into ill health, and he would say I think you see him on Argentinian TV at the end of this. I think he ended up having his own chat show. That's not what's shown on this documentary, but you know, he would say really outrageous and ridiculous things. And this is the thing, he's always compared to Pelé, who again died just a couple of, also last year, yeah, something like that. Pelé was always the consummate professional, right? I mean, he'd do anything for fucking money, but he was not a lot of controversy comes out of Pelé's mouth. Even in this film, there's this bit where he's basically saying, well, yeah, he could be a really good footballer, but he's not really learned how to be a good person yet. And that's about as controversial as Pelé gets. Whereas Maradona would say stupid shit and not really care. And I don't know. It's weird. He loved his mum. We can say that, can't we? We know that's the only thing one of the few things in the plus column of him as a person, I think. But you're right.
And I think that was the point of the documentary, is about capturing that cult of personality for him. The fact that he was, for this time being, he was like a culture icon. And so I can see why people Scolacci, who was another big Italian player, I remember from the time. I remember everyone being very excited by his style of play. So we get to see him. And yeah, but the film is very sort of fixated on just Maradona. It doesn't take into account anyone else. It doesn't even take into account anyone else on his team. It is purely focused on Maradona and his time of this period. And I think, but it helps really, rather than being bombarded with like 500 names in every supporting player and stuff.
Other than Goycochea, the Argentinian goalkeeper, I don't think any other players get a fucking look in. It's like, yeah, it's very weird. Oh, for sure. I just think it's what the. It does say this. There's somebody, some football expert does say, this is where all the best players went to play at this time. But you're just going to have to take my word for it.
Oh, well, his room you see in the barely World Cup is just like players. Plastered.
You also get this look into what a men's dressing room is like. That's a toxic atmosphere, isn't it? Oh, and some of the songs they sing. Oh, what was it, Marad?
I assume it was like the hotel room or something, isn't it?
Oh, mate. No, he's got a photo of Claudia. Right, he's laying back. He's sitting there. I think he's smoking. He's got the World Cup on his bed. You're right. This is in his, like, I don't know. It's like the... It must be some... Yeah, something like that. But it seems to be somewhere they've settled in. Yeah, so it starts with a picture of Claudia. He's got the World Cup on his bed. There's a little picture of the Holy Virgin, that seems to be on the wall. And then he goes across, and there's a centrefold from Penthouse or something. And he goes, but she's the one that got me through all this, and starts lavaciously touching this picture.
Well, yeah, he thinks,
that is the man. There's this guy. This he clearly loved Claudia.
Comes, you know,
but he couldn't keep it in his pants. He clearly did believe in God. Is,
on one hand,
but at the same time, he's a dirty little
person. And the other time, he's just, as he says, he's going out on like Friday night. They're boozing up, doing drugs, and he's sobering up for Sunday's game. This is the game, the plan he's like working on. And he talks about like, oh, I come home like high on drugs and scare my children, and I would have to go and hide in the bathroom. And you're thinking, wow, that's a real great fatherly figure there.
Yeah, and he is. I mean, there's only one other player with that kind of Hellraiser attitude. I think it might be somebody you've heard of, but you know, Pelé was very clean cut. Messi and Ronaldo don't do anything wrong. You know,
yeah,
they live these lives of angels.
He got a kidney transplant and then went out boozing the same week.
The only one which has had the same problems with addictions, but was also supremely talented, it's probably George Best, the Northern Ireland player. I'm sure you've heard of George Best, who
yeah, until we found out what he was up to.
Yeah, that's George Best had terrible addictions, but he played, you know, as an international player, he played for Northern Ireland. That was, he was, you know, he was never going to have that same story. Same way Ryan Giggs for Wales, but obviously he was a good boy, ish. Apart from clearly not, yeah, clearly not. But you know, like shagging his brother's wife. But anyway, but George Best has those demons as well. Incredibly talented, club level, playing for Manchester United amongst others.
I love the demons. The Italian police's
for him,
operation
alcohol
that they've launched.
Worlds.
they're doing this whole wiretap on the local mob.
They
and
are.
Like, they got this phone call.
Yeah,
Maradona,
they're the
so like,
probably only
we
two.
To, I think he's drugged in. It's like,
but we
can
love
my son
people
speak?
Like that. We love.
He as well when he starts speaking to drug his son. He's sort of like talking about the game and stuff. And then when you see the prostitutes like linked into this ring, and in your mind you've got like all the prostitutes attached to like a footballer. They're going to be like these glamorous runway models, but no, they're like these boilers. Yes.
They are street girls, aren't they? They're not. Yeah, these are not high class escorts that he's dealing with. These are, you know, bless them. But that's also part of the tragedy of Maradona, that he, you know, he could have been the richest man, the most successful man, but in a way,
well, no, he,
although he brought a lot of joy to a lot of people, including the
people
of Napoli,
obviously.
Yeah, because
I mean, he shows him being like handled by paparazzi.
I don't think
like,
he ever really
with that situation, and he says,
this, and this film kind of backs
like,
it up. He
to him,
never
like,
really
I
sees
this
celebrity.
Sort of like,
celebrity
that, but if you keep pushing,
was
it,
always
pop
something.
You in the head.
that happened despite himself. and the day that the news is broken that he's got his love child that's been born, and the RAI, Rai, the sort of main Italian broadcaster, come up and ask him questions. Well, I'm not talking to you lot anymore. You've just fucking put me on the front page of the paper with this unsubstantiated lie. I mean, clearly truth, but it's really combative, and he's not media savvy. But no one was then. This was 84, 85, 86, up to 90 in this period, and I think it was a better time. I mean, I don't like these people. I mean, you know, there's a classic thing about football, isn't it? They're thick as shit. And that when they get interviewed after the game, you know, they go, I'm over the moon, Harry, and all that.
You're missing the poetry
now
readings
they
of Cantona, aren't
that.
You?
They just have the they just have these, and partly because they're all from all over the world, but they'll just say,
"It's
oh,
like,
yeah,
oh,
well, I'm very glad I
seagulls will always follow the trawler because they feel they would get
Maradona
some fish."
Would say, "Yeah, yeah, my team is shit, but luckily I've dug them out of a hole." And I kind of.
What, he kicks some fan in the face, I remember, with Cantona.
Like sardines.
And then he
and the trawler
used his
yeah.
fame and fortune to advertise a very nice beer.
Yeah. I mean, there's another guy who had his demons, but he did at Crystal Palace, yes. And has had a mildly successful acting career post football as well, but he was someone who gave it up. He didn't overstay his welcome, and unfortunately, I think Maradona. Yeah, well, Maradona couldn't overstay his welcome because he basically got banned from football. But I don't know. Am I happy that he ended his playing career getting kicked out of the 1994 World Cup for doing cocaine before a football match? Or would I rather him seeing playing for some fourth division Austrian team into his 40s?
Yeah, I think I don't know. Like any successful documentary,
Maradona has a story.
You should be able to
and
take a subject that you know nothing about it and present it in a way that's going to be interesting as well as informative.
Somebody you already
and
knew
I think
about,
the documentary certainly does that, and whilst it in the runtime did
understanding
seem a bit daunting to say the least, especially for a sport that I have little to no love for. This was actually a very engrossing watch, and while it's certainly not going to make my top 50 by the end of the year, I'd certainly say that this was a solid 3.5 out of 5 for myself.
Yeah, and that's basically where I'm marking it as well. On the Blu-ray, there's even more stuff. There's another another hour of extras which was
I
cut
need
from.
To,
I don't
I think
it is
Senna.
As
I mean,
gloriously
as I
successful
Damien
as Senna.
Senna
just tells
all,
this story.
I think all he did
and,
was
and
just
the storytelling
try and whitewash and make
and
out.
Also,
that Amy
tragic,
was more
course,
influential than she
he,
was.
At the end of the film, Senna dies. Well, I don't think that's a secret, right?
The second one is only good, and that's because Mark Rowland was basing it on Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings sound. Mark Ronson, sorry, yeah, whose stepdad is the lead singer of Foreigner.
Mark Ronson, yeah. Is that right? I didn't know that. I don't know. I don't mind Amy as a documentary, but then I don't mind Amy as an artist, but I think
yeah,
the problem with Amy
is. Yeah,
she
was one of Jules Holland's acts he liked to back.
I remember her
and
before
she
was famous, and she was clearly in fucking
copied
trouble
copied
the
70s sound.
Around the time of that first album, she was very highly touted, and she would appear on TV out of her fucking skull. But that album's really, really great. But it's a sad story, but of course she's one of the 27 club, blah, blah, blah. I don't think... I think this is a better documentary than Amy, for sure. But I do think it gets missed out. It kind of just came and went and isn't... I mean, it just... I don't know why. That's why I wanted to look at it. Do I think it's the world's greatest documentary? Of course not. Did I wax lyrical about...
Oh, I know who Maradona was. I mean, yeah.
Yes, I did, but I would have done without this documentary. This documentary just, for me, just added the facts to what
the
I
thing,
already
well,
knew.
I knew about Maradona was that he was a... as
that
I said,
you knew about.
He
I mean,
was a celebrity player, and that he did
not,
the hand
not,
of God.
Yeah, but you...
And that
but
was
you
about it. I didn't know anything about the World Cup. I didn't know anything about Napoli. I didn't know all
of
that. And I knew basically... I knew about the Italian leagues and... basically what their fan base is like just from, as I said, watching from what I saw of like Football Italia, and it's really, really crazy. You see those guys with like the flares and the banners, and you compare it to like British fans, and it's all like, oh, it's a completely different game in Italy. It's like what wrestling is to Mexico. It's like a religion, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, they play on Sunday for a reason. It literally is tied to religion. What I will say is, Italian fans haven't changed that much. That's the interesting thing. There's a lot of Italian football on TV now if you've got the right channels, which you won't. And it's quite. If you go to some of these places, especially even Napoli. So when Napoli won the league last year for the first time since 88, I think, when they won it the second time with Maradona. That could be wrong. The same stuff was going on. The thing is, this time, Napoli had basically won the league by February and stumbled over the line. So every week it was like, if Napoli win today, they're going to win the league. And then they'd draw or they'd lose or something. And so the TV stations were just ready for this. And the city was just waiting to erupt again, like you saw in the pictures when they won it the first time. And then they didn't win. And then all these people were ready to have a massive fucking party for 3 months. Couldn't. And it was a bit like, but then they did, and they did party like it was.
I'm glad you enjoyed this platform to talk about.
But there we go. I think we've probably covered this one, haven't we?
I'm just hoping to be
there's a whole
by
hour
talk
of Stephen talking
now.
About Maradona.
This is going to be like your show reel for that.
and if you want to listen to me do a show on other footballers, please say so in the comments. I don't think so. But there are people I'm very passionate about. I do have my heroes and things like that. So maybe not necessarily footballers.
Well, this brings us into tonight's episode. Thank you as always for listening. If you haven't done already, please do check out our main show, which is the Cinema Film Club, where we continue to explore the wonderful world of Asian cinema. Every episode, we pick a different film to highlight, and same as this show. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. If you haven't done already, please do hit the like and subscribe button and leave us a review, as it all helps us profile the show, especially if you leave a review on iTunes, as that really affects the algorithm for whatever reason. Seems Microsoft have got a stranglehold on how podcasts are ranked. So, but next episode is my turn to pick, and we are going to be heading to Finland for my pick. For a film which is described as the Finnish Spinal Tap, with a film that's got one or two titles. I believe it's known mainly as Leningrad Cowboys Do America, but it's also can be found under Leningrad Cowboys, which is about a very questionable music group who actually do exist, heading to America to find fame and fortune, while also featuring an amazing cameo by Jim Jarmusch as a used car dealer. So that will be coming up on our next show. Mark Mould would probably describe it as quifftastic, if it's anything like Johnny Suede.
A film I've heard of but never watched, so I'm looking forward to that.
Leningrad. Thank you as always for listening. Thank you, my first Stephen.
Yeah. I didn't even know it was
we'll
a Finnish film.
Next time to talk about
in my head, it was
Cowboys
a
do
Russian
America.
Film. But that's
until then, good night.
You know. Yeah. Pleasure as always.